6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Thursday morning, July 17th. Around these parts on Thursday morning, we connect with Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, and today is no different. How you doing, Dr. Mike Strain?
Man, I am ready. We are going to have a what's called a UCG, Unified Command Group meeting, the Governor's Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness in Baton Rouge at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We're going to be focusing on today on the weather. As you know, that there's some severe weather coming through, and we could see 4 to 6 inches of rain across the metro area between now and Saturday. Some areas around the Atchafalaya Basin could see up to 10 inches. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not a hurricane. It's not just a massive storm. But we are using this. Everyone's getting together for the first in-face tabletop-type exercise because we have a lot of new people there in GOSEP, which is good. I've been a member of GOSEP and sat at that table now 18 years. There are a lot of people who will be there for the first time, and this is the heartbeat center whenever we have disasters, and the governor runs it, and, of course, there and the National Guard and everything, and that's where, you know, all the logistics, and that's the central point from there. You know, everything, you know, spans out into the parishes. So that'll be at 10 o'clock today, and we're gearing up for that.
Mike, you know, while this will turn out to be maybe hopefully a non-event, you don't know, there is something to be said. First of all, we should be thankful that it is a non-event. And secondly, there's something to be said for y'all all getting together and having not a dry run because there might be some rain, but having a rehearsal, right?
That's correct. And if you look at emergency preparedness across the United States and much of the world, Louisiana is the model that other states and countries follow because, one, you know, we have a lot of real live exercises. We've dealt with lots of disasters. It's a very good model. It is, you know, well put together, and the whole it works very, very well, like a finely tuned Swiss watch. And it is important that we get together, continue to train, and also that we're prepared for this in case, heaven forbid, you know, there's some severe flooding or there's some issues, or there's a 30% chance there could be some tornadoes in different areas so that we can respond appropriately and rapidly, you know, during the immediate phase, and then also work on recovery. And it's important that we all know what each other's roles are. And you have that face-to-face continuous contact so that, you know, in a moment's notice, I can pick up the cell phone and talk to the adjutant general, the National Guard, or the head of state police, or fire marshal, or whoever that might be, to deal with whatever issue or logistics that we have. So it works very, very well, and it works almost seamlessly in the way, you know, at 10 a.m., normally we meet during the disaster twice a day, at 10 a.m. and then again at about 4 p.m. So any issue that comes up at 10 a.m. has to be resolved. And basically the effects, everything we're doing in place by 10 a.m. the next morning. And so and it all works. Everyone in that room, if something has to be dealt with, someone in that room is responsible for it. And then we work together through our secondary emergency command centers, which I have one at the Department of Ag and Forestry, because I'm responsible for emergency fuel for the government. Any emergency fuel need, I'm responsible to make sure that they get that fuel. We deliver that fuel. Also, responsible for pets and livestock. So when pets are evacuated, we're responsible to assist in that evacuation and then be there to assist in housing those animals. We also work in the areas of logistic and fire control. Wildland fires is under us, and, of course, state fire marshal, we coordinate with them. Structural fires under them, and then we work together on everything else. And then overall looking at environmental disease control, any diseases that might pop up in the environment, we work together on that, whether it's plant-based, animal-based, mosquito-based, or whatever. So we have a lot of responsibilities during disasters. And, you know, our goal is so that it never becomes a secondary disaster due to the primary weather event or other event.
Mike, let me talk to you about tell you what, I just noticed the clock. Let me take a break for traffic here. When we come back, we'll talk about this whole Coca-Cola corn fructose thing, corn fructose syrup, whatever they call it. Would that be good for Louisiana or not as it relates to sugarcane? I'm getting texts about this. Coca-Cola saying they didn't really confirm or deny what President Trump said. but they're talking about making America healthy again. I don't know that cane sugar is any better for you than corn fructose. I don't think a lot of sugar is good for you either way, but we'll see what it means, the business part of it, when we return. We're talking to Agricultural Commissioner Mike Strain. In case you don't know, President Trump says that Coca-Cola will switch from artificial flavoring, which is corn, I guess he means corn fructose, to real cane sugar. Coke said they've not confirmed it. All Coca-Cola brands are wholesome beverages manufactured in compliance with federal law. And the president saying that Coke had agreed to use real cane sugar and not, I guess it's corn fructose. Mike will explain what all that is when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 6:56, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Both of your briefs have been filed and have been submitted to Judge Mike Strain. This is the case of high fructose corn syrup v. cane sugar. Judge Strain, tell me what's going on here. I don't understand. What is high fructose corn syrup? What does it mean for Louisiana agribusiness and cane sugar? And is one better than the other? Tell me.
Well, high fructose corn syrup is a sweetener made from corn starch. So it's processed. The starch is broken down into glucose using enzymes, and then they convert some of the glucose to fructose. So first of all, it's highly processed.
Okay.
And secondly, you know, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of research going on, you know, trying to, you know, really link high fructose corn syrup to fatty liver and fat in the liver, fat in the body, and overall saying that, you know, granulated sugar made from sugarcane and or beets is healthier. Overall, you know, the recommendation is no more than 36 grams of sugar per day. So there will be more research on that. But the bottom line is high fructose corn syrup is a processed sugar made from corn starch by an acid enzyme process. And so that's one thing, it's highly processed.
This started,
so, you know, we've always been.
This all started, Mike, for corn farmers who were trying to find a way to improve, increase the use of that product, correct?
To increase the use of that product in many different ways. And I can tell you that the high fructose corn syrup part of the corn is a critical thing for corn farmers. Now, we are very prejudicial because we believe our cane sugar and our cane sugar is the most delicious in the world. Mm-hmm. And we are the largest producer of cane sugar in the United States. We produce more cane sugar than Florida. And so for us, this is a big step forward. Cane sugar is a very natural sugar, and we think it tastes better. Now, if you look at some cultures such as in Mexico and others, they really prefer, you know, cane sugar, you know, in their Coca-Cola and in their other products. So it's natural. It's very sweet. We have a lot of it. You know, in addition to that, so this is very good news for our sugarcane farmers here in Louisiana. Also, the fact that we are now going to be shipping sugar to Cuba. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, the mm-hmm. country that was the world's largest exporter of sugar mm-hmm. 20 years ago now is going to be importing sugar from Louisiana. So we have that underway as well.
Why is that?
Sugar is doing pretty well. Why? Because they've lost over 60% of their production of all their agricultural products in the last 5 years. Simply, you know, they're on their knees. They have no fertilizer. They don't have modern varieties. They have no equipment. And so, you know, they just can't, you know, they just can't feed themselves. And now, in order to make rum, which is a big deal there in Cuba, they're going to have to be importing sugar because they don't produce enough sugar on the island to make their own rum, and which is one of the things they do export to other parts of the world.
I'll say it. No, thank you, communism. Real quick, corn farmers in Louisiana is secondary to sugarcane farmers, and would this, and we only have 20 seconds, Mike, would that hurt the corn farmers in Louisiana?
No, it wouldn't. Most of our corn here in Louisiana is used to go into actually to chicken feed, and then we export the rest. So it's not, we don't really process our corn here hardly at all.
So it could be about win-win. You know, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. We'll be back.